It's New Year's Eve, and I'm sat in my hotel room in Miami, all alone. But don't feel sorry for me. I'm doing my dream job, and I never gave a shit about holidays or celebrations anyway. I am sorry I'm not with Eri, because she does. But we're going to Skype at midnight, and I'll see her before too long as well. And I'm making money for Little Froggy. It's my unconventional life. Near midnight. I went to the woods because I wanted to live deliberately, to front only the essential facts of life, and see if I could not learn what it had to teach, and not when I came to die, discover that I had not lived. My name is Nigel McGuinness, and this is my unconventional life. It's a podcast, it's a journal, and in a way it is kind of a personal ad. But most of all, it's about navigating the treacherous waters of love, sex, and relationships in 2017. Sponsored by absolutely no one. Every week, I detail my own journey and discuss my own untraditional views and aspirations in that world. Whatever the topic, whoever the guest, it all comes back to one question. How do we best find and express love in 2017? Funny, because when I think back to my life, there were a number of New Year's Eves that I missed for work because I was doing some minimum wage job and always got scheduled for some reason. I remember my ex-wife at the time would always find a way to meet me at midnight and kiss me, and that was really sweet. I sure have been loved a lot in my life. Very few notes this week. Not because there isn't a lot to talk about or a lot of emotions, but rather because I don't want to talk about them. Been some real struggles between Eri and I, actually, but again, I don't want to talk about it. I want to give Eri that privacy. I want to be sensitive to her feelings too. So I'm going to plug in the first part of an interview I did earlier this month, but also talk about this year in review. If you want, you can actually go back and listen to episode 34 of the podcast, which was the end of year episode last year. I went back and read the monologue, and to be honest, it's a little unsettling to see the difference in my mental state between then and now. Given I'm having a kid now, that's perhaps even more so. Last year at this time, I just banked my sperm. After getting it tested before, ironically, at an Asian American clinic where I had trouble watching the porn because of all the bush. I'd got the results back and everything was good. Actually had 8 vials of the stuff, all STD free, and I was living the life that I wanted, with my sperm on ice in case I ever needed it. Little did I know that in a little over 2 weeks I would meet the future mother of my child. It does feel hard to talk about this year. I know this podcast has got pretty dark and depressing at points, and I think I must come across as quite the passive protagonist, which is not much of a character for a movie, I know, but whatever else, it has been my truth. Would I listen to it now? Fuck no. Can I be more positive in the future? Yes, absolutely I can. Eventually. And I have to be. For me, for Eri, and for Little Froggy. I got to see some friends this week and chat and get a lot of emotional support and advice. That's the thing with advice, isn't it? Sometimes it's hard to hear and even harder to take. I went for a hike with Rachel and just felt so glad to have her friendship and support. She told me something that made me smile, so I wrote it down. She said that she's really a lesbian, she just likes to have sex with men. And emotionally, I'm a gay man, I just only like having sex with women. Hard life sometimes, right? But joking aside, I really am finding my emotions just swinging so much, almost as much as Eri's. It's like I'm sympathetically hormonal, perhaps. I don't know, I'm just really struggling at times. And at others, I feel okay. But look, I found someone to have a child with this year. I did well in my job to be able to afford it. They're both positives. Yes, I struggled with the way my relationship with the mother of my child has evolved, but if I fight beyond my fears, I do believe that we agree to be parents for the right reasons, and will be good parents. I'm having a baby with someone who will be a great partner and a great mother. I'm healthy. I'm able to save money for my future. I have lots of friends who love me, and I got to see a lot of them this year. And I have to have hope about the year ahead. I'm going to meet my daughter, and I can work on making my relationship the most beneficial and positive for everyone involved. I'm going to be a dad, so I have to man up and act like one. And that may involve some difficult decisions, but hopefully it will give me the strength to make them. The interview this week, then, is the first part of my interview with someone who I'm sure made a lot of hard decisions in his life and has had a lot of emotions surrounding being a parent, too. In a way, he considers me one of his kids. I met him through wrestling when he ran a wrestling school that broke me into the business. Oh my God, nearly 20 years ago. And he's also dealt with a few of the issues that I've experienced lately, too. So perhaps I can learn something from his 70 plus years of experience. We'll see. Anyway, it's a great interview with a dear friend who, when we first met, all I ever wanted was to have his respect one day. And I'm blessed to say that now I do, and so much more. Okay, we are here in Milford, Ohio. It's a cold December day, but at least it's not snowing, and I'm with my old wrestling trainer, one of my best friends in the entire world, Mr. Les Thatcher. How are you?
I am good, Nigel. And yeah, it was great seeing you today and catching up. Your old wrestling trainer, is that what you said?
Did I say old? I don't think I... How you doing anyway? You're right there, right?
I'm doing good. You know, my health's good. There's mornings I get up and say, thank God I woke up again. There's other mornings I get up and think, damn it, I woke up again.
Right. Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? How long have we known each other now? God, it's been 20 years?
When you came down from Kent State, what year was that?
That was 96 the first time. No, summer, February 97 was when I first came.
Wow.
Down. So that is 20 years.
Yes.
20 years, and what a change, right? You've seen me, when I first came down, when I first came in, how did I sort of come across to you?
As a guy who loved the wrestling business.
Right.
You did. I mean,
but outside of the wrestling business.
Well, you were naive about, which I can't say that any longer, can I?
Well, somewhat I am still a little bit. I mean, at what point did I start talking to you about my life outside of wrestling in terms of dating, in terms of me getting married in UFC?
Wow. You know what? I don't know. Mm. It's just... The 20 years seems like, you know, like I've known you all my life.
Yeah.
I'm going to pay you a compliment here and say that I'm extremely proud to be your wrestling father, if that's what you... And you can tell your mother that if she ever needs someone to adopt you, I'd be more than happy to do that. I would. You've done so much, and you've accomplished so much.
Yeah.
And you've done it with dignity. And even though you're not going to marry into the... kingdom in England, I'll still put you over.
Right. Yeah. But it's interesting because, you know, we've obviously got our history in terms of wrestling, but we've also talked about a lot of other things outside of it, you know, because you've got so much more experience in that regard as well, you know. Now, being in the industry in a very different time, you know, you got to experience a lot of things that I never did in that regard, right?
Right.
You were married when you first broke in?
No, actually, when I first broke into business, I was not married.
Ah.
I was single, 19 years old.
And then when did you get married, first of all?
I was 21.
21. Yes. Yeah. Because that, correct me if I'm wrong, but I seem to remember you telling me before that was just what you did, right? It wasn't something you really ummed and ahed about, right?
Yeah, well, you know, it was like our parents' generation, right? You got married, you had children, it's just what you did.
Mm.
And, you know, I would come home and visit from, you know, being on the road wrestling and go to a wedding, my friends are getting married, and It wasn't like I set out and said, well, I've got to get married and grab the first woman that came down the pike or anything.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was something that you did. And of course, looking back, I realized it wasn't necessarily, well, I derived my daughter from it. So I, you know, in that respect, it was a great thing to do.
Right.
But trying to master that as well as mastering a career in professional wrestling was, wow. Mission impossible almost.
Right. Well, it's something that I never wanted to have kids while I was still, well, there was the possibility that I would ever work for WWE as a wrestler, because if that was going to happen, I knew I'd be on the road so much and away so much that I didn't want to be away from my kids that much.
Right.
Know? Was that something that you struggled with a lot?
Well, you know, the business back then was different. I mean, the same but different, right? I don't know how that comes across, but
yeah.
To master what you and I have done, regardless of the generational differences, it's a full-time job within itself.
Right.
You live it, you breathe it, you eat it, you sleep it, and you honestly have to be selfish in a lot of ways.
Hmm.
And as a young person, probably you don't consider it in that light.
Yeah.
You know, in other words, I fell in love with this woman, and I thought, yeah, I want to marry her, and we need to have, you know, children, and I love what I'm doing for a living, and everything is going to be this magical fairy tale world, and I was wrong.
Yeah. Well, how much were you on the road then?
Oh, it's on the road a lot. She didn't want to be part of the traveling, right?
She's okay.
Originally from outside of Boston, Winthrop, Massachusetts.
Yeah.
And we came to Cincinnati after we got married, and I was... Well, I finally got my foot in the door with Barnett Doyle, and we got married in November of 61. I finally got my foot in the door with them in early 62. So the wrestling thing set off, and I was gone from the house, you know, from living here in the Cincinnati area two or three times a week. Occasionally, she would take a ride with me, right? But of course, then she'd sleep more on the way home. It wasn't a lot of company. I mean, not that, you know, that was her job anyway, but, and then when I started traveling out of the Barnett office, I went to Calgary. She didn't go, didn't want to go.
So when you went to Calgary, you went for how long?
I was there about 4 months, I guess. Well, you know, just getting your feet wet in the territories.
Yeah.
For the most part, you were going in, being a carpenter, what they call jobbers today,
right.
We call carpenters then. And so your shelf life was kind of, you know, was shorter, obviously, than if you were being featured.
Hmm.
And so it was Calgary, Kansas City, Phoenix, Arizona, just, you know, and you're only in and out sometimes in over a 3 month period.
And so in between times, you'd just come back here and you'd wait for your next
game. Yeah, yeah. And wrestled out of here too, because of course, Barnett Doyle, when I first started with them in 62, covered Ohio, Kentucky, Michigan, Indiana,
right.
West Virginia, right?
Yeah.
And then once Barnett went to Australia, the Sheik, Eddie Farhat, took over the Michigan end pretty much and bled down into Ohio too and Indiana. But then Dick the Bruiser and Wilbur Snyder got the Indianapolis office, and they worked with Vern Gagne up into Chicago and so forth. So I could still keep busy here,
yeah,
because I was a preliminary guy at that time. Bruiser wasn't upset if I worked for Sheik, and Sheik wasn't upset if I worked for Bruiser, although they weren't working together. It wasn't like we were going to make or break their promotion if we were with one or the other. You know?
I see, right. But that must have been very difficult, you know, to be married when you're on the road.
Oh, sure.
4 months at a time.
Sure.
And there's no way, well, you just call every night. Is that how it works?
Well, and maybe not every night. Sometimes you just fall into bed and go to sleep.
Wow.
Well, you got to realize, too, no cell phones, right?
Right.
You either call from a hotel phone or from a pay phone on the road.
Yeah.
Communication is a whole different ball game. That's been 57 and a half years ago, Nigel. So,
yeah.
You know.
So then, at what point did cracks start to appear where you were like, wow, this can't work?
I guess they probably started before I saw them.
Yeah.
Again, here's a funny thing. I know Jim Ross mentioning in his book that he wasn't a good father.
Mm.
If you watch the 30 for 30 on Flair, by the way, I had some of the still photographs in there belong to me.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Flair mentioned he wasn't a good father.
Right.
Of course, being a good father would dictate being a good husband as well, or at least to a certain degree.
Yeah.
You know, and I've said in talking about those two, Jim's book and Rick's documentary on ESPN, I'd have to raise my hand and say, hey, I'm one of those probably too, right?
Right.
Again, to pursue the career in professional wrestling, it wasn't just a 9-to-5 job. It was 24/7 job for the most part.
Yeah. So looking back, I mean, if you obviously take your daughter out of the equation, which you can't do, but if there was a way you could have had your daughter but without having to get married to do it, would you say that was maybe a better situation? If you could go back now, would you get married again?
Well, you know, back then, I don't know that that was even... Today, that's an option.
Yeah.
It wasn't... You realize that when I knew it was going to be a divorce, because of the way I was raised, because of my mother and father's generation, I thought, are they going to put a red D on my forehead? He's divorced. Like this, you don't get divorced, right?
Yeah.
You marry and you stay married. And it just wasn't working out for the both of us.
Right.
You know?
How long was that?
6.5, 7 years,
oh, wow.
I guess. Yeah.
That's a fair bit of time. And maybe that speaks to what you said, that it wasn't so easy to get divorced then.
No, well, it wasn't that it was, I don't know that it was any harder. I mean, in terms of the legalities,
socially.
But it was a more social.
Yeah.
You know, the stigma, right?
Right.
Well, you know, when we talk about today, about a lot of things as though they just happened today. Well, like this female abuse thing that's going on with broadcasters and movie directors and so forth and so on. I can remember hearing about the casting couch when I was in my teens.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
And I'm far from my teens today, right? But let's say 60 years ago. But back then, things like that were just, I guess, swept under the carpet, kept in the dark, right?
Yeah.
Or I think with spousal abuse too, Nigel.
Right.
I think if your husband was abusive, you just dealt with it, right?
Right.
You know, sadly enough.
Yeah, right. It's sad that it has taken this long to finally come out. And hopefully now some things will change like that for the better, right?
Yeah.
Fingers crossed. And hopefully, I mean, a lot of my views when I started this podcast were that monogamy, lifelong monogamy, is a largely unfeasible working arrangement for human beings, certainly in today's world where it's so easy to meet other people, etc., right?
Right.
Now, you lived through the whole notion of free love, right? Where for a while it looked as though society was going to go in that direction, right?
Yeah, yeah, you're talking about the 60s more or less, sure.
Right, I mean, you've told me some stories, which we won't get into on this podcast.
No, we won't.
But stories to where, at least if it was done in more of an open sense, that you could see, well, what's wrong with living that way, right? Like the idea of being in an open marriage, for example.
Yeah.
Do you think that's something that could function within American society?
Well, I guess it could. I don't know that it could function with me. I don't know if astrological signs mean anything to anybody, but I realize as a Scorpio that I tend to fit that particular profile a little bit. So,
jealous.
Yeah. And to take, even friendships seriously. As you know, there's been some things in our background, not between you and I, where I was extremely helpful to certain parties and they turned around and didn't return. They weren't reciprocal.
Sure, right.
And it was hurtful. You know, it was hurtful.
And that's a lack of respect, but it is the point. You never had exclusive friendships. For example, if someone said to you, you know what, I don't want you to be friends with anybody else because you're just going to be friends with me, you sort of like go, well, I kind of want to be friends with who I want to be friends with.
Right, sure.
So why, when it comes to being sexually intimate with someone, does it have to be exclusive? Why do you feel jealous?
I think that comes down to the particular, maybe the parties, the two parties, right?
Hmm.
Whether they feel that... you know, I hear about the open marriage. I don't know that I could deal with that. I think as a younger man, single, it was not a problem to realize that maybe a woman that I had a relationship, you know, a physical relationship with, that we weren't being monogamous,
right?
But then obviously I wasn't, I might have been infatuated or cared about her as a human being, but not in love, or wanted to control her life, right?
Right. Well, so that's really interesting that you brought up those two phrases, right? In love and wanted to control her life. Like, right. They don't seem to be very positive things for me. Number one, being in love seems to be more of an infatuation, an obsession. It doesn't seem like a healthy thing that we should base these lifelong commitments on, right? Because for most people, it fades.
Well, sure.
So I don't think we should use that as a gauge of defining or determining our relationships. And then wanting to control people, that seems sort of problematic as well, right? Surely love should be free, completely free.
Sure.
You shouldn't want to control someone in any sense whatsoever. But I understand it because I felt jealous in the past. When Ari and I got into this agreement to have kids, we had a 4-page contract and it was written out that we were free to date anybody else, etc., etc., and this relationship was solely for the purpose of raising children. Adamant about it. And then we also had this agreement once we started talking that if we did date anybody else or see anybody else, once we become sexually intimate, that we'd be open about it. And I was on the road and she texted me that she'd gone on a date with a guy and that she made out with him but didn't really have any sort of feelings for him. And it kind of shocked me that I felt very jealous, even though we'd had this agreement, et cetera.
So your caring was more than you assumed that at first assumed that it was.
It wasn't caring. Again, this is what I think is the big misunderstanding, is they go, if you care for someone, if you love them, then you're jealous. And if you don't care about them, then you're not jealous. I don't think that's the case at all. I think if you're jealous, it means that there's something inside of you that's insecure and your fear of losing them is there. You know what I mean? It's not about caring whatsoever.
Well,
if you're secure in your relationship, yeah, you shouldn't be that concerned about it.
But don't you think that regardless, I'm not in love with you,
right?
But it would affect me emotionally, spiritually, as if for some reason I lost your friendship. After all we've been through together.
Sure.
And I'm not planning on sleeping with you or having any sort of physical relationship
right.
with you, right?
Yeah.
So I think that friendship sometimes, the jealousy will tend to...
Jealousy is a human emotion, 100%.
Yeah, sure.
But in every other aspect of human life, like, for example, your neighbor's got a nicer car than you, your best friend starts dating someone that you like, when we say, oh, I'm jealous about that, we go, oh, well, you shouldn't be. You should get over it. Be secure in yourself, et cetera, et cetera. The material things or whatever it happens
right,
to
right.
be. But when it comes to being in love or in a monogamous relationship, then jealousy is sometimes even encouraged. And if you don't feel jealous about your committed partner, then you don't really care about them. And I don't think that's healthy, you know?
No, I would agree with that.
Well, that is part one. I will see you next week. Huh? Next year. That's another week gone. What have I learnt? And what peace have I found? Cheers for taking the time to listen to the podcast. Drop me a line at myunconventionallife2016@gmail.com if you have comments or questions. And if you like the show and know someone else who might get something out of it, tell a friend. I will be back next week with a week's worth of thoughts and emotions and hopefully some joy. But until then, wherever you are and whoever you're with, try to be kind to others, but as much to yourself. We're all fighting our own battle. Lead with love.